Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to Ask OTC, the show where we answer all of your questions from the week in European football. I'm Dotson Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Miguel Delaney.
This question from Will on Instagram. I saw Miguel has been reporting about this for a while. Why did Zvonimir Boban quit UEFA? And what does it mean going forwards?
I think it has huge meaning because it is the first public move, I would say, in what has been an ongoing civil war within UEFA that could eventually lead to huge changes. The core of this is basically that Alexander Šefrin, the current UEFA president from Slovenia, Boban was seen as one of his key allies, especially given that Šefrin's circle is largely from the Balkans, and of course Boban is a Croatian legend. But there has been increasing dissatisfaction with how UEFA has been run, with this coming to a head, with how just this week member associations were sent proposed changes to the statutes that would mean Šefrin could potentially stay on to 2031, which would be 15 years. And that is because, although they're about to bring in changes that would set term limits of just 3 for any potential president, the issue here is that there was going to be an addition that would mean, or a certain wording, that would mean Šefrin's first term, which took over from Michel Platini, isn't included. And you know, as Boban has said in his statement this morning, that goes against the reforms that Šefrin himself was supposed to lead. And it's seen as part of a wider trend where Šefrin is, I suppose, one of the descriptions to me was that he's lost in power, that the way he's insulated himself at the least is kind of an illustration of the old days of government. But I think that just speaks to a much bigger issue of football, which is what the executive presidential structure does to the game, to the people who fill these positions. And it's actually, I think it's an absurdity that, especially a game now with so much global power, where the Champions League and top level European football is essentially the pinnacle of global sport and arguably the most popular cultural pursuit it's ever been. The World Cup remains the pinnacle in terms of any sporting event. And we basically hand the considerable power that comes with that to these individuals in power structures where there's no, it's not like there's any kind of opposition party to challenge them. they're almost they're left because of the way, because of the power given to them by these executive president roles. European football has essentially left their whims. And if you look at it in real terms, it's essentially meant that, you know, the World Cup has just been given to Saudi Arabia. There's ongoing questions about Sheffrin, because it is Sheffrin, not UEFA, his stance on issues like multi-cup projects, on state ownership. And all of this feeds into this story. I think it will be the start of a considerable move against Sheffrin, but also it will be, it could end up, given the European Court of Justice has started to look at football in that way, from the recent Super League case, it could end up a change to, the executive presidential role within these organisations.
When you bring the Super League element into it, Miguel, I mean, are there two sides to it, like there were for the recent Super League judgment, for example? You can see, on one hand, that there are considerable conflicts of interest within UEFA, but that doesn't necessarily mean that a Super League should happen, which obviously was made explicit in the judgment. But I guess, even if this does lead to some much needed reform in terms of power structure, does it give an opportunity and does it create a vacuum that the organisers of the Super League will hope to leap into?
Now, I actually think, because of the decision in December, that it's too late for that form of the Super League, because they never put in a proposal beforehand. They never kind of asked for permission to set up a league. Also, there are questions over how it would work, despite their attempts to kind of say this is for the benefit of European football. But the other side to this has always been that the Super League arose out of genuine flaws in the game, not least the kind of disparity of resources, what that's done to competitive balance. It's just, I think, the solution proposed was wrong football. But what the ruling in December now does, while it's a victory for UEFA over that form of the Super League, it does mean that if anyone comes to UEFA with the proposal for competition that is in the better interests of European football, like, for example, spreading the wealth around the rest of the game, because as we've discussed in the pod before, you know, Eastern Europe, say, large of it, because of the economy of football now, a lot of it is a wasteland in that regard, as regards what it could be. That gives UEFA a lot to consider. And I think, I'm not sure UEFA, in the current mould under Sheffrin, are responding to this in the proactive way they should. But I think that speaks to a lot of issues in football right now.
Spreading the wealth throughout the game. What a thought, eh? But this is a banger of a question from Lewis. We always get bangers, by the way, but this is a proper, proper banger. It's going to take a while to read the entire question now, but bear with us because it's worth it. Guys, picking up on the fascinating... This is from Lewis, like I said. Hey, guys, picking up on the fascinating discussion that you had on the last Ask OTC pod regarding the downfall of Sevilla and Villarreal, one crucial aspect that I think warrants a bigger discussion is the impact that Florentino Perez's youth team approach at Real Madrid is having on the buy low, sell high clubs of the recent past. Real Madrid's model has started to be copied by Chelsea, PSG, Barcelona, etc. And as more of the rich clubs take on those young up-and-comers, where does that leave the clubs that used to sell up-and-comers to the rich clubs? Villarreal, Sevilla, and to a lesser degree, Dortmund, have switched from buying youth to rebuying aging stars of the past, and I'd say it's not working. I worry that some of these clubs now find themselves in a downward spiral as they don't have a clear model to sustain them the way that they've been used to. So, and here it's coming to an end. This is the conclusion. So, what business model should these clubs who successfully did buy low, sell high in the 2000s to the 2020s era, what should they do now? Look for new markets to find players? Keep rolling the dice on aging players? Wait for the rich clubs to start selling the players that don't work out? Partner with rich clubs like Girona and City Group? A lot to get your head around, but it's worth both of you having a go at this.
Yeah, it's a great question. I guess it really depends on what you think is the cause of Sevilla and Villarreal, for example, and I realise it's not just about them and their downfall. I mean, I think it goes down simply to strategy not being sharp enough and not being defined enough. Because Lewis talked about Florentino Perez and, you know, producing players through the youth team. In a way, Real Madrid were way, way ahead of a lot of these clubs that I think you look particularly at Manchester City and Chelsea, who use their academy for profit rather than for first team players. Because I think if you look at the players in the early part of the 21st century that were produced, not just from La Masia, we know La Masia, that's part of football lexicon. Not as many people know La Fabrica, the factory, which is the Real Madrid academy, which has produced an extraordinary amount of first team players. The difference is less of those were actually used in the Real Madrid first team, at least initially. They might have gone somewhere else, proved themselves and come back. But quite few of those actually went into... So you have like icons like Raul, for example, but he's very... Or Iker Casillas, but they're very much in the minority. And that is part of the reason they're so iconic, because that's in the minority. But there was never the same cultural pressure at Real Madrid to include players in the first team, to include homegrown players in the first team, as there was at Barcelona. Why? Well, part of that is a historical thing, because you look at Barcelona and the fact that they always identified... Now, globalization has changed this a little bit. Barcelona mean different things to different people now, and it's more of a football thing than a historical thing, if you look at how Barcelona are perceived over the world. Well, it's less a political thing, I would say, now, whereas Barcelona were always associated with representing Catalonia. It's something that Pep Guardiola found so incredibly exhausting that he couldn't just be a football coach, and he's very much enjoyed just being a football coach at Bayern and Manchester City subsequently. But for that reason, there was a huge cultural pressure for them to have a homegrown spine to what they did. And of course, the fact, if you go back years, they didn't have government backing to the same level as Real Madrid did often from a certain point of view. So I think if you look at how Sevilla and Villarreal were still able to exist in this environment when Real Madrid bred players for market. So that was never an issue. They were still able to find players like, say, a Dani Alves or a Marco Senna or whatever. And they were still able, particularly in the case of Sevilla, to produce their own. But mainly, these are clubs that have been smart traders rather than have prolifically produced players from their academy. So it's slightly different. I think it comes down to an identity crisis. There's something that David Cartledge has touched on before, especially with Sevilla, where you look at they win such an unprecedented run of European trophies. So obviously, the natural thing to think is, how do you go on to the next level? And you do that by buying more experienced players. But then, of course, you're killing the golden goose, because you're reaching a situation where they are now, where they're stuffed with aging players on fat contracts and absolutely nothing to sell. That is the huge problem that they've got at the moment. So I think, you know, you can look at Girona and how they, on one hand, they've been so successful. They are part of the City Group, but they're expected to wash their own faces. They're not endlessly funded by something else. You know, there's a limit to what they can do, and they have had to be smart in the market. So it's still possible to be smart on the market.
Nevertheless, Miguel, is that model now broken, the buy them cheap and sell them high model?
It's not broken, actually. What has happened is, it at least for the clubs outside the elite, it's become a victim of its own success. This is something the most horrific name drop here of all time. I was speaking to Wenger about this at the start of the season. We discussed it on the pod, where the market has essentially followed its logical progression, where clubs, especially the major clubs, have belatedly realised the absurdity of paying huge fees for players in their late 20s and early 30s. So more and more of the elite clubs have been going younger, basically, because it makes much more sense. The best example of this is Real Madrid, as we've discussed in the main pod this week. And the most extreme example is Chelsea, who have similarly probably taken it to absurd extremes. But of course, that creates attention for all the clubs who have basically perfected this model. And yeah, what it was suggested in the question, what they probably have to do almost is look for those who don't quite cut it at the bigger clubs, or those who maybe don't meet their potential and can maybe be brought on another way. Or who knows, maybe it leads to another sort of kind of correction of the market, and that maybe suddenly it flips, and for these kind of less wealthy clubs, they see value now in going for older players who maybe actually have to recalibrate their careers a bit as they go on.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I think it's fair to say that this next question is just for you, Miguel. This is from Jeremy on Twitter. Can an Osasuna fan enjoy seeing Athletic and La Real do well, or is it more of an anyone but them please reaction?
Of course, I would say, you know, it's quite a moot question because I'm always, as a professional journalist, able to separate the professional from the personal. but it speaks to interesting issues, I think, for fans of the game as a whole. I mean, like, as Osasuna and Real Sociedad, they would have always said, and it's funny the way this goes, I mean, for all we talk about kind of the big clubs and the super clubs, the nature of football and the football pyramid and the wage race means that no matter what level you go to, there's always a bigger fish you complain about. And a club that would complain about bigger fish above them, well, to someone else, they're the exact same problem. So, I mean, you can even see it, like, say, in broader terms, Celtic and Scotland there, and then when Celtic go into Europe and play the real big boys. Similar, Osasuna and Real Sociedad would always have seen Athletic Bilbao as the big beast in the area, who, I suppose, because of their policies on players, would always attract the best talent that they were trying to cultivate. But that said, it also has to be spoken of now within, and fans have to think about this too, especially where the game is more financially polarized than at any point in history. Fans can be envious of the success of clubs like Bilbao or rivals, they can also look to it as an example of what they can potentially do in this very stratified game. So it can be, I think it's one of those things that can be both bad for your own rivalry, but yet good for the wider game and potentially illustrate an example going forward.
Well, okay. And this is my favourite one of today because it's got a food aspect to it. Don't overdo it. Yes, I like my food. Stuart on Twitter says, has the burgeoning foodie scene in UK grounds, led by the likes of Footy Scran, been mirrored elsewhere on the continent, or was their food always decent inside the stadiums in general? Because I've had some very forgettable bocadillos in Madrid. Bocadillos aside, Andy, you've been all over the continent to football grounds tasting food, haven't you?
Well, I think the crux of the question here is inside the stadiums. Because inside and around the stadiums, very, very different. Of course, you'll have forgettable food at football stadiums all over the world.
Any stadiums, football, baseball, whatever.
Yeah, I think so. And in fact, I remember the first time I went to a game in Iceland, I went to a game between, I think it would have been a European Championship qualifier between Iceland and Romania. And what they did, they literally ordered like 100 pizzas from Telepizza and stood there with the boxes on a pasting table selling slices. It's unbelievable. I've never seen anything quite like that.
Well, you expected them to have a pizza oven in the stadium. It's the easiest way to go, isn't it?
Something. It's a bit youth club, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about a qualification campaign for a major championship. Anyway, enough about the Icelandic FA's brazen profiteering. I think when you go to places all over Europe, the football culture, the food culture around the ground is always, always more interesting. And I think, where is that thing of developing, like, say, my own team, AFC Wimbledon, like sort of having almost a portable food market within the stadium? That's something that I don't see a lot of places on the continent, or what you might see at Dulwich Hamlet or whatever. That doesn't really happen. Now, it's different, I guess, when you come to a club like we were talking about Real Sociedad, for example. You could argue, and several people will argue, that San Sebastian has the best food in Spain. But for that reason, like, the food is so good in the city centre, why would you ever go and eat food outside a football ground? Especially when it's relatively close. So I think there's an understanding that there's, you know, you can't compete when you can just go into a pub and get something that's absolutely exceptional in the city centre of San Sebastian. Why would you think, you know what, I might hang on and, you know, go for a sandwich that's seen better days just outside the ground?
Well, you know, Andy makes a compelling argument. I have a theory about this, if you don't mind me throwing this in the mix, Miguel, that you got to keep it simple inside the ground. So, for example, you go to a baseball ground, you get peanuts. They're great. Yeah, they chuck a pack of peanuts at you and maybe a hot dog, but everything else has got to be around the stadium.
Well, also, surely something that is makes logistical sense, something you can hold. You don't want any kind of difficult, you know, and that involves a fork, really, when you're just standing there or sitting there watching football. And of course, the classic one from Spain is the simplicity of pipas, sunflower seeds, which, you know, if you go to any Spanish stadium, it's become famous. You see the discarded pips on the ground.
Talking of something you can hold, and you were talking about the hot dog there. Inside the ground in Germany is slightly different, because you do have the fork and you do have the plate. And of course, when you take it back, you get refunded. And that has been the case for decades. So this idea of like intensifying recycling efforts, it's just like, you know, ordering bottles of lemonade in the UK from your milkman in the 1980s, you know, that, and, you know, getting your deposit on the bottle back when you take it back. That idea of recycling has never gone away. And you see that outside the stadiums as well. You know, you see guys pushing around shopping trolleys where they collect bottles and cans so they can get the deposits back. And, you know, you had some guy making $4,000 at the 2006 World Cup through collecting empties, for example.
You see that in Swedish stadiums a lot as well, by the way.
Yes.
They come with big plastic bags, you know, bin bags, and just pile in all the rubbish that you've dumped.
Environmentally friendly and mildly profitable.
Just a final word on this, Miguel, from you. Why are the bocadillos in Madrid so forgettable?
Oh, I'm not sure I'd agree with that. You mean in the Bernabeu? Or in general?
Yeah, at the Bernabeu.
I mean, look, ultimately, it comes back to Andy's maxim there. Clubs generally are trying to maximise profits, which means high prices for not necessarily the best care put in, and you can get much better stuff just outside the stadium. The mistake is actually buying in the stadium in the first place.
Yeah, well, thank you for listening to Ask OTC. You can't say we didn't feed you on this one. If you would like to ask a question, you can contact us at any time at Radio Dawson, at Andy Brassel, at Miguel Delaney, or at OTC Pod. And of course, you can email us, otc@footballramble.com.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.